OPN Ask an Angel podcasts are conversations with global angel investors and venture capitalists. We explore how to invest, understanding investment strategies and approaches to due diligence. Join us and learn what it takes to be a startup or what it takes to invest in the next great company.
Perfect. Welcome to Supporters Fund, Ask an Investor. I'm your host, Jeffrey Poppin, and let's please welcome Cameron Atlas, a keynote speaker, coach, TED Talk, and creator, as our first superhuman for today. Welcome, Cameron. It's a real pleasure having you join us today.
Great to be here, man. Looking forward to it.
Love it. Well, Cameron, before we dive right into this, and I'm excited to get to chat with you today, and not because of the great content that we're going to be able to put out today, but because I think I've been following your journey, and we connected probably 10, 12, 13 years ago. And I think throughout that time, I've been excited to follow along your journey because you've done a lot of great things. You've changed a lot, not only on the music side, the coaching, but you've just done so many things that make anybody in business think, man, this guy is learning so much, doing so many things. I think that's what got me excited about being able to have you on today. And when I said the first superhuman is because I haven't really figured out what this segment's going to be when we do a lot of obviously everything investor-wise. And I thought, man, this would be such a good fit for how startups actually get out in the world and what they do when they challenge the world. And I think you're the first person that came to mind on the person I know that really challenges the world every single day and comes up with new ways to be amazing in this world. And I'm glad that we got to have you on today.
Oh, dude, I really appreciate that. That's a big setup. I better deliver, right?
you got this. Well, the best way to create this and to start off is that we like to give a bit of a background on yourself. So you can go all the way back from your TED Talks, all the things, schooling, everything that you've done. Just give an overview of kind of where you're coming from. And then one thing about you that nobody would know.
Right. So we'll go right back to start with. I was born in Outback Australia and did all my schooling out there. Had singing lessons over the phone, you know, in grade 12 because there was no singing teacher within 500 miles of where I live. So this is days before the internet was good enough to have any kind of video call or anything like we're doing now. So that was an experience in itself and got to experience how technology can allow us to connect in ways that we wouldn't otherwise be able to and have access to opportunities that we wouldn't otherwise have opportunities to access. And so, when I moved to the city, it was about 13 years ago, there was a pretty traumatic experience of somebody committing suicide across the road from where I was living at the time, a mother's young boy. He was only 17 years old. And myself and another neighbor were the first two people that were over there. And yeah, to see and experience everything that goes like that, it's something that you never forget. You know, to see a mother with a teenage boy in her arms is pretty dramatic. And so to see the father and the grandparents come home afterwards and seeing the look of absolute helplessness on their faces was enough to have me ask a couple of big questions of, you know, a statement first of, no one should have to go through that, not the boy who felt like that was the only way out, and nor the family and everything they would have gone through afterwards. And so the second thing was, dude, there's people that need help. What are you doing about it? And I think it's often how a business starts, right? It's often how we develop a sense of purpose is we ask ourselves a question and we get very passionate about solving the problem that we're asking the question about. And for me, it was about that element of suffering, the pain that we go through in our lives. And for me, to begin with, when I started coaching, which was a few months after I, you know, enrolled in a coaching course, and I had no intention of working with any kind of business at all. It was simply to help people that were going through challenging situations. And then a couple of clients in, one of the guys just happened, that I was working with on a personal level, happened to be a business owner as well. And then as we worked on the personal stuff, it allowed the business to grow at the same time. And I thought, maybe is there a connection between the two? And that's been a beautiful journey to go through over the last, 13 years now of realizing that there is a huge connection between who we are as human beings, how we show up, the limiting patterns of behavior that we often developed as a child that then come into a business world, whether it's struggling to trust people, whether it's not believing in ourselves because we don't believe we're worth it, there's imposter syndrome that can come in. There are so, comparing ourselves to other people thinking that we need to go in a certain direction when we really want to go in another direction. And so we end up building something that makes us completely miserable. And so there's so many patterns that play out. And right up to today, you know, it was about 70, mid 70s is the oldest guy that I worked with. And even him, we went back to childhood in the first sessions, right? So, you know, there's usually stuff that's playing out underneath the surface that if we can get to that, we can get to the core of the challenge that's playing out. And that's me included as well. I still remember it was in 2017. It was after I'd sold everything that I owned and went on a journey around the world. And it was a beautiful experience. And I found myself in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, and I was playing on a grand piano, creating some music there after filming in Colombia. And I had this question just pop into my mind of, if I died today, what's the one thing I've regretted not doing? And it's just such a great question. I continue to ask myself that question over and over and over again. Because, you know, if you're younger, even if you're in your 50s, 60s, even into your 70s, if you go, right, so you get to the end of your life, what's it been about to make it all worthwhile? And, you know, you could be, there's an exercise that I did as a, you know, right near the start of the coaching journey. They say, sit on a rocking chair and you're 80 years old and you're looking back over your life, what's it been about to be really worthy of a worthy pursuit? And that's a great exercise to go through and a warranted exercise to go through still now, but it can lead to some complacency because, you know, for me, I'm only not even halfway through that yet. And so, yeah, I could get around to that stuff, but if I'm gone, if I'm dead today, and I've got no other chance to get something done. So often I've found with clients, and for me personally, it was straight away, it was having a grand piano on stage while delivering a talk. So immediately it came to my mind. I thought, well, if that's what you really want to do, man. You know, I'd given talks, I'd delivered coaching engagements, but I hadn't found a way to bring the two together in a way that was impactful, valuable, and made an impact in people's lives. And so I went about making that happen, you know, build out the relationships, reached out to the network, said, this is what I'm doing. And with clarity and conviction, was able to then be deliver a talk, was it 3 months later? And it's been a wild, wild journey since then. You know, the TEDx talk you mentioned, that was in Rome, and we had people from 40 different countries around the world involved in a music video and then performing the song live on stage. And, you know, this is a great experience of the biggest thing getting in my way is myself. And that has been my experience over and over and over again. And as a result of that, there's ultimate responsibility that could get taken. And I find that with clients as well, is that if we can take ultimate responsibility for the results we're getting, or more importantly, the results we're not getting, then we have full power to change that.
I love that. And there's a lot of things to unpack there that you shared along this journey. And the one that it really surfaces is that life's an experience. So all of these things that you've created are experiences. And the one that transformed you in the journey was obviously what happened in front of you when you were there earlier on. But if you go back, as you mentioned, the one that probably transitioned you even more into the music world was doing something over the phone and learning that experience, and that kind of stapled something into you that this is a passion, I love this, but you didn't move it in the direction you needed to. And then this next experience opened you up a little bit further. And then as you started to learn and you got involved in more things, that all kind of collided together. And then you were able to open up those passions, which it sounds like you obviously engaged in that quite strongly. And I like that the line you used is, getting in the way is yourself. Do you want to share a bit about more what that means to you, or what that meant at that time, and has it changed?
Yeah, today? And how? Yeah, it's played out multiple times. And a little side note: you mentioned about something that nobody knows, maybe a couple of people know. I won a busking competition when I was maybe my mid-20s, I think it was. Had a massive afro. Went and took my digital piano down to the Mall of Adelaide. And I beat the magician that was, he was pretty decent, and yeah, got awesome. Number one prize. So
I love it. And thank you for bringing that back up. Eventually to ask again. So I love
it. But you know, what you're sharing there though, I think is really important, because the getting in the own way is what tends to happen is ideas can feed on themselves and curiosity ends up being the bridge between where you are and where it is that you want to be. But if we're not open enough to create that bridge, then we close off from opportunities. We close off because of the limiting patterns that are playing out. And so curiosity is a beautiful way to open up. You just think about curiosity. It's an open type of energy. It's what if, it's what could we do? Like that kind of language, and there's curious language and there's curious tonality there. And this happened when I was invited to deliver the TEDx talk in Rome. I was in Mexico City at the time, and we had people from all these different countries recording the music video that was going to play on the big screen behind while I performed it live on stage. And for my part in the video, there was a grand piano that was in the apartment that I was in Mexico City. And I thought, I'll just film there and, you know, it'll be okay. But then everyone started recording their videos outside in crazy locations in front of castles and rivers and ruins. And this is not going to cut it. Like, I can't just have me inside in this darkened room and everybody else in these crazy locations around the world. And so I thought, oh, I just won't put myself in the video, and I'll work on doing that later in the year. I had this grand idea of taking a grand piano out into some crazy location and filming a music video there. And I'll do that later this year. I'll just focus on getting this done. And then one morning, I was just lying in the bed there. I thought, what if I could do it in this video? And I only had a very short amount of time. I had a couple of weeks before I was going to be in Colorado, and then I had to head to, I was booked in to a place in Budapest in Hungary, which had a 150-year-old piano for me to play on and rehearse on, which there's a whole other story there of it being out of tune and me worrying whether like all of the music that we'd recorded was out of tune. So I had to go down to this local music store, which had a digital piano for me to test it to make sure. So classic in itself. But coming back to Mexico City, I just thought, well, what if I could? Okay, what do I need in order to do that? I thought, well, I need a piano. I need a piano moving company. I need a location. I need a videographer. I need a photographer. I need a drone pilot. You know, we need all of that. We need the permits to, in terms of the location as well. And as I started thinking it through, I thought, you'd be crazy not to at least have a go at this. And Jeffrey, within 24 hours, I had the piano, I had the piano moving company, I had the videographer, I had the photographer, I had the drone pilot. All we needed was the location. And then a couple of days later, was able to find and get in touch with Garden of the Gods in Colorado, which is this crazy red rock formation, and got permission. They were excited about it. And so we went there at sunrise, filmed there, you know, as the sun was coming up and the sun hits the rocks, it just turns this bright orangey ready kind of color, and it's just stunningly beautiful in the photos. Yeah, and in the video it looks like, oh, it looks like it's such a beautiful day. Nope. It was so cold. It was in about April time frame, so it was freezing, literally freezing cold at that time. And so I had to have these gloves in between takes, put them back on. The guy who was the videographer brought a thermos, you know, with him so that it'd keep my hands warm. But it's one of those that doesn't have any heat coming on the outside. So it was cold on the outside and hot on the inside. So it didn't work at all. So we just had to put gloves back on. My, you know, skin came up apart from my nails because of how cold it was and how frozen fingers were. So yeah, crazy situation. But the reason I share all of that is that was when I had that major insight as well of, oh, the biggest thing getting in my way is myself. I was the one that chose to believe that it wasn't possible until I believed that it was possible and then went and made it happen. I was responsible for that. That was my limiting pattern of behavior. And so with that comes, okay, if that's possible, what else is? And notice the language there and the tonality comes up again. It's curious language and it's curious tonality. Curious language and curious tonality opens you up. Even if you have curious language, but you don't have the curious tonality, it can close you off. You go, oh, what am I going to do? That's a worry, it's a fear, it's a scarcity type of energy that's going on there, and you're going to retreat back because it's going to feel unsafe out there. And so you're not going to take specific actions. You're not going to dream bigger. You're not going to take risks. You're not going to have the courage to go for what it is that you believe in. Whereas if you use exactly the same language, but with curious tonality, and say, oh, what are we going to do? Exactly the same language, completely different direction. Open up versus close us off. And I think as companies, as business owners, as startups, there needs to be that constant state of openness. Yes, you need to be laser focused once you've made a decision as to how you're going to execute, but there also needs to be a time for possibility. There also needs to be a time for dreaming. There also needs to be a time for opening up and wondering what could be. What could we do to solve this challenge? And that's the thing with startups, there is a constant state of challenges coming up, and you've got to be so adaptable and innovative in those moments, because you don't necessarily have all the resources available to you that you that a large corporate might have. And so you've got to come up with some pretty nifty solutions to the challenges that you're experiencing. And one of the ways that you go about that is through opening up, through that curious language. And what's beautiful about that, and a final thing I'll say here, is that your bad idea might just give birth to somebody's great idea. And this exact thing happened when I sold everything that I owned. Just before that, I thought, I still want to travel. I still want to coach people, I still want to play music. Like, that were the three key aspects. I wonder if there's a piano that I could roll up in my suitcase that I could take around with me. And I look online and there is one. It's like $30 or something like that on Amazon. It's like the worst quality piano you could possibly buy. But it's an option. But for me, learning on a piano growing up, nowhere near an option. I need to be able to feel the keys. I need to be able to feel the weight of those keys to get the expression there. And the beautiful thing about that, though, was, well, later that day, I think it was, maybe the next day, I wonder if there's places around the world that I could stay in that already have pianos in them. And then worked out how to do this advanced search on Google and found all these short-term rentals, and there's just places everywhere around the world. And crazily, coming full circle, that's how I ended up in Argentina. That's how I ended up in Mexico City. And I wonder if I didn't have that bad idea to start with of maybe I could have a roll-up piano in my suitcase, would I have been able to experience those things? Would I have been in Argentina for that question to pop into my mind of, if I died today, what would I regret? Would have that then meant that I didn't actually go forth and have the courage to go for it when it comes to having the piano on stage? And then if that didn't happen, then I wouldn't have got invited to the TEDx talk to deliver the closing talk there and having the grand piano on stage there. And I wouldn't have even been in Mexico City anyway to then allow me to uncover the biggest thing holding me, getting in my way, is myself. So isn't it just crazy and beautiful and amazing that bad ideas can give and create light around a great idea that you haven't even thought of yet, but you've got to give yourself permission to have bad ideas first and foremost. And that's so important.
I love that. I'm not even sure I would say it's a bad idea. I actually think that
all of the ideas you had were
great ideas. It's the execution that may have been hampered. Like you said, you can't carry around a grand piano, but you had to start somewhere. And that exploration is what drove you into a bigger realm of concept. So when you take that, think of the fact that today you can go into so many cities and there's a piano sitting at the harbor front and you can sit down and play. There's a piano at the airport that you can play. That wasn't there 10 years ago. But there is now. And someone probably said, well, why is there a piano here? Well, when they looked at the numbers, they said, you know what? There's something unique about this tribe. There are people that are probably 20 million people in North America that know how to play the piano. Well, that's a unique offering. Maybe if we drop one down, someone will go and play it. And lo and behold, there's lots of video of people sitting down and amazingly playing it. And now you've got experienced people showing up and playing these pianos just because it's so unique, right? So what you created or what you started with
may have perceived as being a bad idea, but I think in the shortcoming, but in the long run, you actually opened up an entire world to doing something somewhat unique, which is, hey, there is a tribe out here that wants to be able to travel, go somewhere where there's something that they can get comfort from, which is a piano, and I need to search for this. So it's just like a person looking for trails. Well, those are common. We got to have trails so people will travel and have trails, or golf courses or something. Well, there wasn't anything for that artist and that creativity. So now you've got all these unique experiences that have started to come out in the last, say, 5, 6, 7 years, and they're matching to what you were being creative about 10 years ago. So I think it was a great idea. Just at the time, you're like, I can't wheel this thing around, it's junk. So maybe it was perceived as a bad idea, but I honestly think it was brilliant, because today it's changed the way people want to connect with people. And that goes from how you explore investing in a product or how you work with something, is, are there enough people out there that can do the same thing or want the same thing that I want? And if there is, now I've got a market. Well, you were able to determine that tribe, which was, I need to find some unique people that have these systems. And actually, when you probably were in there, you probably met some really cool, creative, amazing people, all because you found someone that knew how to play a piano. And I'm going to think you'd meet some of the coolest people because of that, just that one element that isn't super unique, but it's so unique that nobody would think, I need to look for this. And you got to find that on someone else's doorstep and then kind of hang out, stay there for a bit and experience that talent.
Yeah, I love that. That's, I mean, you're spot on. And you talk about from a unique standpoint, I think there's finding, and this comes from a startup standpoint, companies in general, is if you can find something that's both unique and valuable, those two aspects is something that I continue to, for my own self, continue to ask the question of, how am I creating in a way that's both unique and valuable? Because unique on its own is, anyone can create something unique, but unique and valuable, where you mentioned about having the market fit, you know, having that, having a market where you're, you know, you can build something. If you can build both of those and then have something in alignment with something that you really enjoy doing at the same time, that's a, you know, it's a home run to me.
It makes life a lot easier. It certainly gives you that energy that you need to move forward. It reminds me of a couple of stories when you were sharing that on my end, and what it came down to, and I was trying to remember, there was a Jim Carrey movie where it was the opposite, and he says, instead of where he would say no, he says yes. So he ends up saying yes to everything.
Yes, older man. Movie. Yeah.
And yes, man. And I think it kind of the storyline of what you're saying is that, you know, sometimes we have to change the narrative. And the only way to change that narrative is that our comfort zone is to go what we're familiar with. And in your case, you didn't have a comfort zone of selling everything and going to other countries and traveling around and looking for pianos and looking for stories. So that was super unique. So you had to figure out, how can I do this? Or in this environment where you had 24 hours to do something, you notice what the creativity level that you could create in the shortest amount of time because of the time crunch you put yourself in. And I think that's what makes it exciting. That's what drove you to get to that end result, is because it was the immediacy. I have to have this done in order to deliver X. So if you take that type of drive, I look at where the most pivotal changes occurred on my end. And those happen to always be where I didn't want to be somewhere. I fought against being there, and then at the last minute made the change. And that was actually the life-changing moment that occurred in my journey. All the ones that were normal, natural, I went there and this happened, the outcome wasn't the same. It was always when there was an emphasis on, I don't want to be here. I drove 45 minutes past the meeting. And then when I went to the meeting, there was an investor there, a few investors there that just tagged me down because a conversation occurred on a podium that I wasn't even meant to be part of. And that changed and triggered everything. I got invited to all of these investor meetings, and boom, now I'm, you know, investing, going all over. But that was a trigger point. That wouldn't have happened if I didn't turn the vehicle around, even though I drove past the place and went all the way back. Why did that happen? Well, there was something that drew you to that, but it was also that urgency. I have to fix something. I don't even know what I'm fixing, but what is it? And in your case, you knew what you were fixing, but you waited to the last moment. And that last moment is what triggered the bigger outcome. So how do you take that type of energy and that focus and help startups realize that, hey, I've got something here, but I need to action it. And the problem is the action never occurs. So you can't create urgency for everything, obviously, but there is something that triggers that person, just like it triggered you when that incident occurred across the street. It was that moment trigger that changed you over into the next realm of your journey. Startups, they look at a problem. Oh, yeah, that's a problem. And then they go to work and they forget about it. What is that action that gets people to really react and change? And I think that's where you'll start to see, you know, to come to think of it, when there's big layoffs in tech, startup boom occurs. That's where the best startups come, because they got laid off, they've got severance, they've got comfort, and now they start to challenge life and say, I'm going to create a new company. And then boom, you've had .com, you've had the financial crisis. Some of the most amazing companies come out of those times because of the controversy they had to manage, right? So how do you create that same controversy in regular day life just to get yourself to do something and step above your common ground?
This is a great conversation to have. With your situation, there's a couple of things to mention here, because this nicely dovetails into this. You had an outcome that you know you wanted to achieve. There's a reason why you went back there. Even though it was painful, even though it wasn't what you wanted to do in that moment, you had an outcome and a reason why you did that. And that, if you don't have that, you're up against it, right? You're massively up against it. Because here's the thing, if you understand then, okay, this is the outcome that I want to achieve, and you might not have absolute clarity. Let's say somebody gets laid off, for example, and they go and create a startup. They go, I don't know what I'm going to create yet, but I know I want to make a name for myself. I know I want to create some kind of change in the world. I know this specific problem really gets to me, and I want to be somehow have a role in solving that. Yeah. For me, it's around that well-being component of, especially on the mental and emotional side. And so, because it's huge, it's a huge challenge. And if I can play a big, you know, at least a role in that, then that's a great legacy to leave. And so you might have some type of a subjective understanding as to what it is that you want to create. And then at the end of the day, the thing that gets somebody to move and do something is it's pain and pleasure. Either you're moving away from pain or you're moving towards pleasure. If you don't have enough friction there, between where you are right now and where it is that you're going or moving away from, then why would you move? Like, there's no point. There's no hidden benefit there. If my perception is that I am just going to be exactly as I am today, tomorrow, the only reason you might do that in terms of staying the same was, well, that's another day that I'm healthy. As an example, right? But usually, if it's, I want that outcome, I'm here right now and there's a gap. And you've got to either increase the amount of pleasure associated towards moving towards something, or increase the amount of pain associated towards staying where you are. And that's what's going to get you to move. And there's no right or wrong as to which is better. The moving away from pain usually is what's easier, because it's, I got to get out of here. It's often why people's biggest breakthroughs happen after their biggest breakdowns, is because they're forced to move. There's no other option. They must move. And so there's the external environment is forcing them to move. What I would say is that if you can develop the ability to internally force you to change, that is, then you're not reliant on any external environment. External environment still comes up and it's a challenging situation, but regardless of whether that's there or not, that's ultimate empowerment, that no matter what's going on externally, I know I'm going to execute in the way that I've deemed to be most appropriate at this time. And to do that, first and foremost, the outcome that I'm aiming to achieve, and really drive up why is it that I do want that, and for what purpose, and why would I want that? And eventually you're going to get to some sort of, because this would allow me to know that my life has been worthy of living. This will allow me to know that I have done everything I could do on this earth during my lifetime. Some kind of grandiose purpose, right? Then, if you've got that built up, then your purpose, the way I look at it is your purpose has got to be bigger than your problems. Purpose bigger than your problems. And if you've got that, then it doesn't matter what comes up. Even if you don't feel like doing it, there is a, I'm going to do what's required because I'm going to choose my, and the way I see this is that most people will choose short-term freedom at the expense of long-term pain rather than choosing short-term pain with the benefit of long-term freedom. And that's what we're talking about here is really that freedom is a sense of pleasure in whatever version of that that is for you. It could be from a financial standpoint. It could be from happiness. It could be fulfillment. It could be free, like mobility from a physical body standpoint as you get older. There's many different ways that you could define freedom. Freedom from mastery of a certain skill set, which allows you to explore things that other people simply don't have an opportunity to experience or explore. And when you look at short-term pain versus short-term freedom, people are more willing to eat that cookie, to scroll through that social feed because it's an instant release. It's an instant pleasure right there. And if you can understand, and this is something that I've come to understand for myself personally, specifically with the piano, you know, I'm about 18 months specifically into the guitar now. And for the first 500 days, it was an average of 4 hours a day on the guitar every day for 500 days. And so it was full on. And I, you know, there's a level of proficiency definitely that's happened there, but I've been playing piano for 30 years now. And so the skill set there is a level of freedom that comes from a depth of understanding. And if, for those of you tuning in, if you can really grab hold of and really work to understand and then truly actually experience it, the freedom, the long-term freedom that comes from mastery is an extraordinary feeling. Because anytime, you know, there's an hour on piano that I do each day, as an example, in preparation for talks. It's hour a day on the piano, hour of vocals, hour of guitar. The hour on the piano, I'll finish up there. And when I finish, it's like I go back through all of the moments that I've been through over the last 30 years in a period of like 10 seconds. And it's that feeling of freedom. It's the feeling of that long-term freedom that is so much more rewarding than the short-term fix that you get from scrolling through a feed or from eating something that's tempting, as an example there, or procrastinating because it feels easier to do, or not following up with those phone calls, not following up with the investors, you know, not doing the work that's boring and monotonous. Right. But that's what leads to the long-term freedom. And when you get there as well, and then there's a never ending journey that you go on, but you know, you get to a version of it at least, which then you move into the next version. And it's just that's what's beautiful as well. It's just never ending. Is that it's then the monotonous stuff that you've gone through that you really love and appreciate because it was those small moments that led to the grand version of yourself that you've become. And that could be the version of the company that you've built and how you've built it up from nothing to something truly extraordinary. It could be a relationship of yours that was really challenging to begin with, but has grown into something so beautiful. You know, getting incredible shape physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, financially, financial well-being, whatever that thing is for you or things are for you. That long-term freedom is, if we can, more of us can be thinking about that, to me, a lot more innovation will be done. A lot more problems will get solved that are actually problems that we need to solve versus, you know, short-term fixes. So, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. So I think if you take all of what you just shared and I throw this into a quick summary, that the long-term freedom comes from short-term challenges. And the short-term challenges are actually created by your subset mind, like your mind that has been thinking about these changes that you want to implement. And you're put into a situation where it's gratification or long-term pain. And you probably sit there and think, why is the world against me? Why is this happening?
And that's because you're meant to change. You're meant to shift at that moment. And your moment is to choose to make the shift and to change long-term gain or short-term. And the problem is that most people will take that short-term gain, which is instead of looking at this challenge as being a way to continue to grow. So right now I'm financially being beat up. Well, instead of going and figuring out how to build a long-term play to get further and longer, you do something that's quick, which doesn't get you out of the, gets you out of the rut, but doesn't get you out of the rut of what you're doing. And then you just become monotonized into what you're doing. So it hasn't changed. You haven't really morphed into the change. You've just continued to work along. So you'll never get further than that. And if you would have rode with the mindset of what was challenging you and use that as the energy to drive even harder, you'll find yourself, propel yourself into that big change, which is loss of money, loss of relation, loss of all of these things, because you know on the other side, when you come out, you're going to be that much further ahead and being that much more smarter, quicker, faster, whatever that might be. So it sounds that if you take that time instead of not taking the action and you're already in the back of your mind thinking I need to do X and I need to get here, then you should be riding that wave. And when you're faced with those challenges, instead of just going to the monotony of everyday life, take the challenge, go after it, fight it, get overcome these barriers and move into the right spot. And I think the line you used, which was, I think, really conducive to the conversation, which is being curious. I wonder. And I wonder if I can do this. I wonder if I should do this. The world's driving me this way. I need to go harder. What is that innovation? What's that long-term freedom? And how can I create an outlook in this new direction and take the new direction instead of taking it that the world's against me, push yourself in this new path and find new entities or new people to support you on that new journey, because it sounds like that's where you want to go anyways.
Yeah, I love that. You can celebrate the challenges. See, anybody tuning into this, what's led you to grow? Those challenging situations where you've come out stronger than before. A great friend of mine said, you know, you always come out stronger than before. When I was being really challenged, I was just complaining. She said, oh, you always come out stronger than before. Oh, you don't understand though. This is a really challenging situation. And afterwards I thought, you know what? She's right. And so each time now when I approach that, a challenging situation is, you always come out stronger than before, man. Come on, step up. You got this. Yeah. And that language of step up, of utilizing language that is uncompromising but supportive. The way I see this is being your uncompromising best friend, where you're celebrating your wins when you're up, you're supporting yourself when you're down, but you're giving yourself a good kick up the butt when you need it, right? Just to really step up. And you know, if you can celebrate the challenges that you're experiencing, then it becomes, what's the Stoic principle? Amor fati, lover of fate, to love it all, right? And if you can love it all, the good and the bad, knowing that each of those situations is allowing you to become a more remarkable version of yourself, and then it's your responsibility to continue stepping up in and through that, you come out the other side, like you mentioned, much stronger, better, faster, smarter, and better for it.
Until the next time, and you have to keep doing that. And I think I learned when I was, I remember sitting one time and we had closed a large deal and everybody's like, why are you not happy? And I was like, you know what? I'm already thinking about the next thing. I am happy. I'm just not showing it. But you're already so involved and passionately involved in what you're doing that sometimes that overlay of the pain, you're not seeing it because you're trying to step over it. And there's nothing wrong with stepping over it because you're going through it no matter what, but it's how you receive it and how you celebrate it along the way. Because I think those little wins, and I go back, my mother used to say to me, celebrate every little win you have. So when I graduated, make sure you're there. I was like, I'm too busy. Go. And you know, I remember when I graduated for my second graduation, I literally went on stage with my backpack on top of my robe because I was still in class for my next degree. So I had to go on. I didn't want to put my bag. And everybody was like, what's this dude doing? And it was because I had nowhere to do with it. So I'm graduating while I'm in school still because I was on my next thing. But you have to take those moments. And I think at the end, it really was gratifying. And if I look back at now kind of all the things that you shared, is that no matter what, you're going to be faced with these. It's the fork in the road that you choose what is best for you. And if your mind was already going down that new path, then figure out how to challenge that. Do it with a smile, bring the new crew on with you and keep challenging. And every entrepreneur always loves to blow things up. So when things get complacent or get boring, you're going to rip it all apart anyways. Mm-hmm. So if you already have your mindset in the direction you're going, kind of keep figuring out how to get there and challenge yourself even more along that journey. And that brings me to this, a kind of overlapping piece, which is change. And you and I have talked about this a few different ways, and I'm going to share only because it is one of my favorite books. And then I'll dive into one more question before we change to the next segment. But there's a book by the Heath brothers called Change, which is called Switch. So it's a really good book that really helps you better understand how to modify and work with change. And I know that throughout the years, you've gone through these stages that you talked about, and you've gone through changes, and some of them are brought on by family or business. There's always something that contextually brings in change. What are a couple of things that you can share on change and how to get through change so that you don't end up on the wrong side of change, but that you do stay positive and move forward? And because you've gone through so many great changes, and you know, the last time I saw you live in person was in, it was in 2017 David Suzuki was talking, you were playing piano, and it was just a random thing that I had gone to. I can't even remember why I was there, who I was with, but I do remember being there and seeing you on stage and be more excited, like, oh my God, I know that guy, that's so cool. And then you got up there and played and sung, you know, made a great introduction and set up the whole stage for the event, which was pretty amazing. But all of that was part of change. So there are a couple of points that you can kind of share that help people really engage change and not take it as, you know, that it's the most difficult thing in the world, because we already know it is. But how did you go through it, and how do you let other people kind of work through that angle?
Definitely. There is two things that I want to mention. One is, you mentioned about pain before. There's something that I call pain stacking. If you're going to go through, the way I see this, if you're going to be going through a certain level of pain anyway, find a few more things to stack on top of that that you know you needed to change with anyway. If you're going to be experiencing the pain anyway, like, why not stack it on top and go, you know, within reason, you know, whatever you can handle. go pretty extreme though if you can. And if you can stack that on top of each other, you were going to go through that challenging situation anyway, but you come out the other end with five things done instead of just one thing, all of a sudden you're in a much better space and you don't have to go through that pain over and over and over again. You can go up to the next phase. And also, you've just seen and experienced how you can go through that level of pain and come out the other side even stronger. So it's a win-win there. And that fits into the framework. I'll give everyone a framework here. So from a change standpoint and how to implement new habits or implement a new strategy, anything, you have these four stages, right? So especially around us as humans and us as changing, whether it's in business or it's in personally. You have certainty of outcome first and foremost. You have flexibility in your approach, you have recognition of your progress, and then you lock in the new identity, all right? You have certainty of outcome first, which is understanding what is the outcome I'm aiming to achieve and why. Then you have the ability to be able to be flexible in your approach. If you're not, you're in a science lab, right? And so if you're flexible in your approach, you're able to go around different scenarios, different situations. So flexibility in your approach is critical. If you're not, you'll get stuck. And just notice, with each of these phases, if you don't have the previous one sorted, you will get stuck. If you're not clear on the outcome, you're going to be implementing stuff that takes you in the opposite direction. If you don't have flexibility in your approach, it doesn't matter how certain you are about the outcome you're wanting to achieve, you won't make progress, because life is not a science lab. Business is not a science lab. You can't control the situation. So you have flexibility in your approach, so all of a sudden you're able to adapt to the different scenarios that are playing out any single second. Then as you're being exposed to these challenges, the third step, you recognize the progress you're making. And this comes through, there's a process that I call reference points. All right, I'll give you, everyone tuning in here, the structure for a reference point, which is the ability to be able to have the self-talk that allows you to see the and notice and take note of the progress that you're making. And so this is split into past, present, and future. Past, present, future. We want to disassociate from past, associate to present, and align to the future. Disassociate from who I was, associate with who I am, align with who I'm becoming. And so the more that you can disassociate from who you were, which was old version of yourself, the person who used to implement in this way, all of a sudden I'm implementing now in a different way. So I've decided that I'm going to execute this strategy when it comes to raising funds, or this strategy when it comes to generating clients, this strategy when it comes to being healthier, whatever the thing is. And then I notice the difference that's being made. So I'm disassociating from who I was. Oh, look at how you used to implement this. Look at the results you're getting now as a result of you doing something different. Imagine what it's going to be like over the next 3, 6, 12 months of continuously executing in this way. Keep going, man. This is extraordinary. And so what you're doing is you're bridging the gap between the old version of yourself and getting over to the new version of yourself. But the risk is that under a pressured situation, we revert back to the level we're most comfortable with. And if you haven't disassociated from who you were and who you are now, you're going to go back to the old version of yourself and keep repeating the same crap over and over and over again and wonder why, I'm really not just cut out for this stuff. That's why people go through diets, right? On the health and well-being side, and then they end up putting on more weight than before. It's because they haven't built in enough reference points and enough recognition of the progress that then leads to the identity being locked in. And all of a sudden it becomes, because in this fourth stage, this is who I am, not this is what I do, which is in stage three. This is who I am. And if it's who I am, it would feel weird not to do this now. It will feel weird not to follow up. It will feel weird not to go out and have that workout first thing in the morning. It will feel weird to not implement in this way. And it goes, it's the same as on the belief side. If you have a negative belief about yourself, the one that I had of, you always come out stronger than before. Right. I implement that in this way. It leads to a certain number of actions. If that's my identity now, and this is who I am, I always come out stronger than before. You're going to act in a completely different way when you go through these stages to then get to another stage of identity, which is the next level of yourself, which could be the next level of your company, the next level of your leadership, the next level of your relationship, the next level of your health and well-being, whatever the situation is. And so those four stages, what I love about each of those four is that there is an internal and external component to each of those. Internal certainty of outcome. I know what I want to achieve. Everyone else in the marketplace says it can't be done. There's a lack of certainty of outcome from the external world. If you don't have the certainty of outcome internally, that's enough to overcome people's doubt. You will give up. And you haven't even gotten past the first stage yet to be able to get through any of this other stuff. Same with recognition of progress. This often happens, is someone will give somebody else a compliment and they go, that was this person that did that. Or, you're just saying that because you need to be nice. You need to take on those compliments, internal recognition of progress. Because if the external recognition of progress isn't there, which, by the way, in a startup, there's going to be a bunch of time where the recognition of progress is not there from the external world. The clients aren't going to be coming on board. The customers aren't going to be knocking down your door. Investors are going to be saying no. You're not going to have the best employees yet. You need to have enough recognition of the progress that you're making so that then you take the external world as feedback rather than validation. Because if you're taking external world as validation, the external world becomes then who it is or what it is that you execute on or don't execute on. Oh, it's maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm not cut out to do this. Whereas feedback allows me to go, that didn't work. What am I going to do differently that would allow me to get a different outcome? Yeah. And so then recognition of progress is, hey, I'm continuing to try, continuing to do, continuing to change, continuing to change. Those four stages, internal and external, you can pinpoint where it is that you're going wrong and then rectify that. And all of a sudden you're firing again.
Absolute gold. I want to like cut that out. Can't even cut it out, but just post it up on the wall, man. No, that's brilliant. I was running out of space to write, so I hope I can remember all those. But I think you really summarized those four pieces really nicely on the stages of change. And the one that I think really resonated was the last part where you talked about the feedback and not internalizing the feedback as against you, but how you turn it around to make it about a learning exercise to enable you. And the word there is enable. You have to figure out a way to enable yourself from that feedback. Because I think of the startup pitching their model or pitching for money, they're always going to get a lot of negativity. Oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. And that just is human nature. People don't see the vision of you in 10 years. They see the vision of you today. And you need to see yourself in 10 years and where this is going to morph. Because really the line is, this is what I'm doing today. This is Cameron 1.1. And next week it's 1.5. And the month and 2 months from now and 2 years from now, it's going to be Cameron 2.9. And that's the difference that's going to happen, is that if you're always evolving and learning and building, that all of these things become a learning ability for you. When someone gives you the negative feedback, you can internalize that, quickly shift it around and find the positive and figure out, how do I alter what I'm doing to get to that next layer? And I think that that is so valuable, because I think a lot of the time we get defeated by all of the words around ourselves, and we don't listen to the words that are actually guiding us forward, which are the pieces that you need to pull out of there to find that positive outlook.
100%. And make sure that the feedback that you're taking is from a warranted source. Because some people's feedback is just not worthy. You know, someone's got their, everyone's got an opinion, right? You got to make sure that you're taking on the feedback from the people that matter. Which if you're targeting a certain market, there's a good piece of feedback. But if somebody else that's completely separate to this doesn't quite understand it, so what? Yep. Let them have their opinion. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, and continue on. Go forth.
Don't let it defeat you, because that's not what it's about, right? To your point, it's find the right people that are the A-listers in that space. Take their feedback, take it as criticism, use that to morph your opinion, your change, and then try to appeal to the other people. But it really isn't as important as to the market you're going after. So well shared, yeah. We're going to kind of pivot now, because I think we can keep going on this, because this is obviously very exciting and well provided on the coach side. There's a lot of great tidbits here that every founder can learn from, every business owner, or everybody just in general personally, on how they can adapt to change. Because we all want it, we're just too afraid to implement it. And I think you've created a good way for you to kind of work through those stages, which also brings a comfort when you work through the stages. It's kind of knowing what those are, which is, a friend and I were talking about how one of their sons was put into Kung Fu, and into kickboxing. He's 6'4", big, big kid, but he was, as his dad would say, he's a teddy bear, and he was afraid of everybody. And then when he put him in here, his son changed. He became more confident. And that confidence came because he understood how to take care of himself as being a bigger person. He knew how to stabilize himself and how to balance himself now, where he didn't have those things before. And that helps you in that next progression in life, which is the same thing you're going to do when you're dealing with no's and no's and hundreds of no's all the way through. It's how you internalize and change and make that change to go forward, so that you can be the better version of you. But you can also go to your 10-year plan and not look at it as, oh, I have to alter this and I'm just going to stay my regular job. There's a way to kind of tackle that forward and take the value out of it. So I appreciate all of that. It's very well shared. We're going to jump now into our one use case, if you will, of an experience or a moment that you've had that really defines what it takes to be an entrepreneur. You know, just kind of a quick story that kind of shares what you feel a case study would be that entrepreneurs are going to go through and say, you know what, this is going to happen, but here's the outcome and you got to look forward. And I think everything we've talked about really defines that, but I'm sure you do have a great case study of a business or a founder that you've worked with that you could share.
Yeah, there's one example. There's a client recently that was going through some very serious challenges, both personally and professionally. And was very challenged by this. One of the things that we went through was understanding what is the worst case scenario. What's the worst case scenario here? And we laid it out and we wrote it down and realized that, okay, it's not an ideal situation, but it's not the end of the world either. In his mind, he'd made it out to being the end of him. But the reality is it's not. It's an undesirable situation, right? Absolutely. It's not the ideal situation, but he's going to be okay. that ability to be able to make peace with the worst case scenario is what will allow you to go forth without fear. Because if there's nothing to fear anymore, if you've made peace with the worst case scenario, if you know that even in the worst outcome, I'm going to be okay, then, and make sure you write that down as well, because in your head, we tend to make things out to be much bigger than what they are, what they actually are. And having that as a grounding point to be able to then lift off from, to be able to then solve the challenges that you're experiencing, it's huge. It's huge. And so I'd say that, you know, I mean, there's a bunch that I could share, but that one in particular is pretty recent. And I think, you know, especially in today's world, there's challenges going on. People have different challenges, situations that they're being very challenged by. And again, if you can make peace with that worst case scenario, you can come from a more abundant, curious place while still being strategic and methodical.
I like that. It's taking the worst case scenario and it's working backwards. It's basically saying, here's the final outcome that you're going to be if we don't change, make this happen and do these element different things. We take that and work our way back. We're going to come up with a better plan that will hopefully get us not in the worst case scenario. But let's figure out what that worst case scenario is. And I think that's a great way to look at even at this early onset of your business. Here's my business. Here's what the worst outcome can be if we don't do these things. And every time you plan that next quarterly meeting or that next yearly strategy is what is the worst outcome that we're not going to get to? And if we don't do this, we're going to be out of money. We're not going to raise. We're not going to hit these KPIs. So no one will invest and we'll never grow the business. So now let's take that back and figure out what has to get us there so that we can avoid that worst step, but also find the right steps that are going to get us into that next stage. So I think that really aligns
absolutely
nicely.
You know, that reverse engineering, because at the end of the day, you go out 3 to 5 years time or 10 years time, whatever the time frame is, get back to 12 months, what has to be done, get back to 90 days, what has to be done, what am I going to do this week? And then on a weekly basis, what worked, what didn't, what am I going to do about it, what do I need help with? Those four questions, and do that over and over and keep changing, keep repeating, keep adapting, keep tweaking. And that as a structure in terms of rhythms, those 90 days then spans into the 12 months. The 12 months goes into the 3 to 5 years, and you know, all the, you can just laser focus in on the things that need to be done over this next week or next month.
I love it. And it reminds me of a great book called World Inc. And what they do there is they talk about some of the world's largest brands, one of them being, I think it was Toyota. And Toyota plans 10, 20 years out. And they're like, how do you have time to plan that or even know how to plan that out? And that was part of their main strategy, was that in order for us to get where we need to be, we need to plan really far out. And then we can bring it back and restructure it along the way, but knowing that that's where our end goal is, and then keep coming back to that. So that 10-year, 20-year projection may change, but at least it gives you a target and you figure out how to get there from today and what modifications do you need to make to you, to your business, and to where you're going in order to get to that. And I think to your alignment to what you said, that's really what you're trying to do, is you're trying to figure out how to avoid all these pitfalls, and those pitfalls coming with having a plan. And maybe you have to hire coaches and other people to keep you aligned to all of that, because that's a lot of work to be able to keep regurgitating and figuring out how can I get through this and how do I do it in a positive way that doesn't make me feel like I should just give up because this is too hard or too much work. And I think those plans of being able to see where you want to be in the future makes a big difference.
I couldn't agree more. And make sure as you're planning that out for your company, plan it out. If you're a founder, plan it out for your life. There's a reason why you're building this. Yes, it's to solve challenges. Yes, it's to make an impact. Yes, it's to leave a legacy, but it's to create a life for yourself as well. And if you build something that ends up leading to dysfunctional relationship, your health and well-being suffering, you not getting to know your kids, like these things that is maybe the reason you went into it in the first place, get clear on what those are. Yeah, there's going to be certain sacrifices you're going to have to make on the way, but that again should be a long-term freedom that you're shooting for. And get clear on both sides, on the personal and the professional side. Because I've had too many clients come to me who have exited out of a company have no idea what they're going to do next. It's a very extreme loss of purpose, because all of a sudden I'd never have to work ever again. And yet I'd have no sense of purpose because everything was all about that. And the other areas of their life are really struggling. And that's not okay. You deserve the opportunity to have a life that's extraordinary. And that comes from, yes, having an extraordinary company and exiting out well and raising and doing all of whatever it is that you're going to do there. But it also comes from the areas of your life that you deem to be most important to you. And usually it's going to revolve around those areas that I've mentioned: relationship, family, health and well-being, maybe friendships and belonging, and then the professional side. Maybe there's one or two others, but they're usually the main ones that come in there. Make sure you've got clarity about what extraordinary looks like to you. So last thing that I'll mention here, there's a song that I wrote in 2020 called Worthwhile. And I was reflecting on my own life, and also I don't have kids of my own at the moment, niece and nephew's lives, and who are they going to become? And what are they going to create in this world? And are they going to live a life that's deeply fulfilling? And the final chorus, there's these four questions that I continue to ask myself, and clients continue to ask themselves as well. What have I become? Was it all I really loved? What have I given up? And was it worthwhile? And if you can answer those four questions, hand on heart, that it was worthwhile enough times in your lifetime, you're going to live a very extraordinary life. If you answer enough times, the answer is no, that's where regret creeps in. And you get 10, 20, 30 years into the future and you go, man, I wish I'd done this differently. And you don't want to be doing that, especially when you've heard this now, is you're going to know in 10, 20, 30 years time, oh, you know what? I had that wisdom. I had that insight and I didn't do anything about it. Well, that's on you now. That's your responsibility. And if you haven't taken responsibility for that and taken action in alignment with that, it's going to kick your ass later on. Might as well put the things in place that are going to allow you to experience an extraordinary life now, even though there are going to be sacrifices along the way. Ensure that it's leading to the long-term freedom, and it's whatever that long-term freedom is for you.
I love it, Cameron. That's brilliant. I love the extraordinary life part, but well said, well shared. We're gonna jump into a couple of quick last segments. We're gonna do this one that always excites me. It's the newer one, which is the 60-second rant. So I'm gonna time this. I think you know the structure to this. You've got 60 seconds to rip through, and let me just pull up the. All right, I'll let you know when we've got 5 seconds left, but the point of this is to just rip on anything that you think is great. I will try and force a rebuttal, and you've got one comment after that, and then we'll jump into the last segment. Ready to roll?
Let's do it, man.
All right, you're on.
I'm going with uncompromising best friend. We talked a bit about this. Many people, especially in the startup world, especially across the board, are their own worst enemy. If you're your own worst enemy, you're kicking yourself when you're down, and when you're up, you're saying it's not going to last. That's not okay. If you're with your own self, you spend far too much time with your own self not to enjoy your own company. Instead, if we shift that over and we go to a best friend, yeah, you're going to support yourself when you're up. You're going to support yourself when you're up, celebrate when you're up. You're also going to support yourself when you're down. But when you're not taking the action you need to, you're probably going to cut yourself some slack. Uncompromising best friend. Celebrate when you're up. It's going to support you when you're down. And when you're not doing what you need to do, the language becomes, come on, man, you're better than this. Step up. Step up. And it's not beating yourself up. It's not tearing yourself down. It's not saying you're a worthless piece of crap. It is saying you are better than this. You know it. Let's go.
I love the let's go part. And I think it's very motivational on all aspects of what you've just shared. So my rebuttal to this, and maybe it's not a rebuttal, the supporting factor is, who do you find that can help you when you're in those down days, when you're just trying to figure out, how do I get around this corner? What is it that you do to overcome that? Because I think, to your point, you have to look for the silver lining in every little thing that you do, listen to the voices around you and find that game plan to keep plowing forward. But when you are hitting a wall, who's one person you reach out to? Who is that person that you know will give you that insight that you don't expect? And is it a random person they just asked on the street a question and you get the answer you're looking for? Or do you have a go-to?
Yeah, there's a go-to, there's multiple go-tos. So it depends on what challenge and which challenge, like which area of life the challenge is in. And so I'm going to, if there's a specific area that I'm being challenged in, I'm going to find the person or the people that have the solution that I'm aiming to have in that specific area and find out. And I ask the question, what am I missing? Where am I falling short? What haven't I thought of? Because there's something in there, there's a blind, and I'll say, I have a blind spot around this. What is it? And then there is one guy in particular, a great friend of mine who's back in Australia. We catch up on a monthly basis, and we've got a great friendship where when we jump into the call, we know very quickly who we're going to be focusing on for the day. And for that, you know, our session, our conversation where there is no holds bar, it is, all right, I'm going to share exactly what is on my mind. And you need those people in your life. No one, no sugarcoating. This is where you're falling short. This is where you're not stepping up. Come on, you're better than this, which is in its own right, an uncompromising best friend.
I like this, that you're better than this line. And I think we all need to look into ourselves to figure out, can we find someone that we can trust enough to spend some time on a Zoom call or in person once a month and just hash it out and let all the cards fall and see where that lands. So I think that that's very valuable share to get people to think, is there somebody I can do this with that's going to bring enough value or at least trigger my mindset to be able to come up with a solution to move me forward? Because there's no point in staying locked up when you can get out and expand your mind and have somebody help you do that.
Yeah, completely agree.
All right, we're going to go into the quick questions, personal side, rapid fire, and then we'll wrap it up. So, all right, first question. What is the piece of advice you give founders 9 out of 10 times?
Those four questions. What have I become? Was it all I really loved? What have I given up? And was it worthwhile? And if it wasn't, let's do something about it.
I love it. Do you have a philosophy or any rules that you stand behind?
Yeah, I mean, a bunch of what we've shared today. The major one is the biggest thing getting in my way is myself. That one is just so incredibly empowering.
What tech will define the world in the next 5 years?
AR.
Okay. Who is your hero, mentor, and why?
Grandpa was a remarkable human. He started woodworking when he was 80. And it was a great lesson in it for me of, this is someone who was never too old to reinvent himself.
I like that. What is your biggest fear or phobia in business today?
Not experiencing the full potential that I knew I was able to execute on. If I wasn't able to execute on that, that would allow me to, you know, result in me feeling that I haven't lived up to what I could have actually executed on, which would be a real shame.
That pressure, that's a lot of pressure. Yep. Totally understand that. What is your biggest goal that you find that you're going to achieve in the next 2 to 3 years? Like, what's something that you've just nailed on the wall? I have to do that.
Is it an enhancement of what I've done already? I want to have a grand piano out under the stars for a certain type of retreat, for a corporate type event. So whether that's with a string quartet or an orchestra or something like that, some cool experience like that.
I love it. And one last question on this portion. If there's one thing that you could change, what would it be? And part B, in your TED talk, is there anything that you would update, being that it's been almost 5 years since the TED talk? Is there anything that you would say differently? I had to throw that in somewhere because I really enjoyed the TED talk. I don't think there's anything to change. But if there was, you're the artist, so you would say, yeah, you know what? I probably wouldn't have worn that shirt, but everything else is great. So I have no idea, but you tell me.
Two things on the TED talk side. One, I would have changed the title. So it wasn't, the lesson that I learned is that the title really matters, and the title we didn't get right. And so from a being able to impact the number of people that it could make, yeah, impacted a decent number of people, but title big time. And secondly, it would be, I look at both the piano skills and the vocal ability that I have now. You know, it's like I said, it's 5 years later of going through a very intense training period. And I look back and go, oh, I cringe a little bit when I sing. So yeah, there would be the inserting of maybe a dub track.
Fair enough. That's the artist in you. That's the artist in you. So
yeah,
that's good.
Always growing and evolving. So yeah.
I love it. All right, we're going to jump into some last rapid personal questions, and then we'll end it up there. So pick one or the other. Most famous person that pops in your mind?
Gates.
First brand that pops in your mind?
Nike.
Book or movie?
Movie.
Superman or Batman?
Batman.
Fortune cookie or birthday cake?
Fortune cookie.
5 minutes with Bezos or Oprah?
Bezos.
Mountain or beach?
Mountain.
Bike or run?
Bike.
Big Mac or Chicken McNugget?
None.
Trophy or money?
Trophy.
Beer or wine?
Neither.
All right. TED Talk or book reading?
TED Talk.
TikTok or Instagram?
Insta.
Facebook or LinkedIn?
LinkedIn.
Favorite movie and what character would you play?
Oh, Secret Life of Walter Mitty is a classic, and I'm going Walter Mitty, my friend.
I love it. Yep. That's awesome. Great, great movie. Favorite book?
This is a great one that I'm reading right now. So maybe recency bias. So Peak, great book, and it's on how to develop expertise.
Peak, I like it. Favorite sports team?
Port Adelaide, which is over in Australia, AFL, Australian football team.
That's good. I like that. That's pretty cool. All right, we're almost there. What's the meaning of success to you?
Living in alignment with your values.
And what is your superpower?
Helping people to see what they can't see and helping them move through that.
Pretty bang on. I would probably throw in that you also have the ability to get people to engage and to be comfortable in sharing. And I think that you have an ability to get people to action things and move forward. And I remember from the first time we met, which was at a dinner in Toronto, and I'm going to say it was back in 2011. I don't remember the specific year, even though I tend to always remember years or dates. But I do remember you engaged. We had a great conversation, and that's kind of where all of this has started. So I think you have a very good way of getting people aligned into where you're going. You share very well in your vision. So I think to all of the things you shared today, I'm going to say, Cameron, it's been an honor and a pleasure to finally get the opportunity to interview you and learn a lot more about yourself. But you shared a lot of fantastic things. I took many, many notes, of course. But I want to thank you again for all of your time, especially being on the other side of the world and jumping into the podcast. So thank you for that. And the way we like to end our show is we like to give you the last word. So anything that you want to share to the community, investors, startups, business minds, I turn it over to you to share that. And please also share how people can get a hold of you and reach out to you.
Yeah, final thought, you're capable of so much more than you think you can do right now. You're capable of so much more. That'll be the big one to finish with. So just imagine what's possible. Cameron Atlas is the website, and at Cameron Atlas is the social handle for the main social channels. So would love to connect with you guys.
I love it. That's great. I was too quick on the buttons there, but thank you very much for sharing that, Cameron. Brilliant. Thank you.
Absolutely welcome.
Okay. There's so much stuff to unpack. So I'm just going to surface level some of these, but I think that some of this really goes back to just understanding when it goes to the change part and being able to move yourself forward as an individual, as a business. He mentioned the four stages.
I think it's brilliant that if you understand this technique, how it can help you while you're being faced with challenges, you know, and to make that change to go forward is note what the change is, being flexible, and then referencing the change point and where you start to progress forward, you know, disregard the past, understand your present, figure out what the future is and where you're going and if you're getting there. And, you know, the realization component to that, and then making that change and then kind of denoting the new you. And I think those really make a big difference on how you tackle problems, how you tackle things that you're being faced with, and how you manage manage pain and manage things that you're going through as a business. Or when you're being attacked from all fronts, how do you morph and step into this and make it better and take that negativity and change that into a positive? And that goes back to the, you know, the pitching or the critical feedback you get. How do you take that in, internalize it, come up with a solution and move it forward and make it a progressive benefit to you instead of taking it as, oh, I should get out of here and I don't fit. I think there's so many good valuable pieces to that. And I think we have to take, you know, summarize all of this and take how this is all being delivered. And that is that change is inevitable. And how can you make that change benefit you? And how can you find the positives in the feedback that you're getting and surround yourself with the new team when you start to make those changes and get the support that you need? And to his point, he has someone he talks to on a monthly basis where they can just rant and throw everything out, that those things make a big difference in your well-being, but also in your mindset of how you're going to get to where you want to be and have that long-term goal, have that innovation, have that change. Figure out what that friction is that's going to change you and keep making you become the better version of yourself. And all of these things take time and they won't just happen overnight. So remember that this is all part of the plan and this is all part of you strategizing where you want to be. And once you figure out where you want to be, you'll continue to work to that angle until you get to the next stage, until you figure out where you want to be next. So always figure out what that long-term freedom is. I love that. What is that long-term freedom that you are looking for? And then work your way towards that. So thank you again, Cameron. That was fantastic. Thank you everyone for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please feel free to share with your friends, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or please follow us on Spotify, Apple, and or Stitcher. Feel free to share an audio or video clip around our show, and we may include it in one of our future podcasts. You can follow us at marketing@oakpeoplenetwork.com or at LinkedIn at Supporters Fund. Your support and comments are truly appreciated. Please visit us at supportersfund.com or startupevents@openpeoplenetwork.com. Thank you and have a fantastic day.